Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Here's Nylander in the Oilers' zone. Sharp angle shot. He scores! Here's Seabrook, right circle, fires. He scores! Oh, he's leveled by Andrew Shaw with a thunderous check. Here's a loose puck in front. They score! It's Saad. Shoots. He scores! The Cat connects with a one-timer.
It's time for another episode of Blackhawks Crazy, presented by FanList.
Kemp kicks it to a stick in front, came over to Saad, put it to Kubalik, and shoots, he scores! His first Blackhawk goal, Dominic Kubalik! Mana there, fires, stopped in front, shot, rebound, score!
Chris Bowden and Scott King break down the latest storylines surrounding your favorite Chicago hockey team.
Welcome back to the Windy City, Andrew Shaw!
Now, here they are, Chris Bowden and Scott King.
Hi again, everyone. Thanks for joining us on the latest edition of a Blackhawks Crazy podcast. Scott King and myself, Chris Bowden, coming to you from the United Center after the Blackhawks snapped their 0-3-1 slump with a 5-1 victory over the LA Kings. And just a quick thought here before we dive in a little bit deeper, Scott. Much, much needed after the end of this stretch where 7 in a row at home, 8 of 9 after this game on Sunday night, and now you're going to play 7 of the next 9 on the road. You had to start worrying, even though we're less than a month into the division starts, the division in the conference starts getting away from you, and this is only 2 points, and it came against a weaker team, but they've been a lot more concerned if they didn't come away with this as they score a season-high 5 goals.
Yeah, all of a sudden, you know, after last year, heading into this year, everyone suspected and thought the defense might be the problem, even though Bowman made some good moves and got some good, solid defensemen over here. And then, you know, we're sitting here scratching our heads that the offense is the problem. And finally, on Sunday night, the floodgates opened, but it opened against a not-so-great team in the LA Kings. So we're not out of the woods yet with the scoring. I think, obviously, some major steps are taken, a lot of positives. Nylander making a lot of great plays, even improved on defense, according to Colleton himself. And look, not only did the team play better on Sunday, but I thought Colleton finally did something that maybe he should have done a long time ago. You know, maybe he didn't have to put Strom, DeBrincat, and Kane all together because he liked the work that Ryan Carpenter did for them up the middle, freeing things up for them. So maybe those guys can stay together, but I think we saw Sunday night you definitely need Strom and DeBrincat together.
Yeah, at least those two guys were able to break out of it, and especially after you could tell it was kind of wearing on them, and it's still wearing it probably on Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane. Kane picked up an assist, but Toews was held off the score sheet, so we'll get into that a little bit more. But you mentioned the caveat was it came against a Kings team that was last in the league in goals against average at 4. They were last in the league in save percentage. Their save percentage was .860. Coming into this game. So you do it with that caveat. It's also the 28th ranked power play in the league as well. Blackhawks have their own issues on special teams too. Before we proceed, we want to give a shout out once again to FanList. Blackhawks Crazy Podcast is sponsored by FanList. FanList is the best platform for season ticket holders to sell their tickets. Are you a Blackhawks season ticket holder who sells multiple games? Get over to fanlist.com/Blackhawks Crazy. It's spelled FANLYST.com. FanList partners with multiple ticket marketplaces and lists tickets for sale across all marketplaces all at once. Sites like StubHub, Vivid Seats, SeatGeek, GameTime, and many more. And they do all the work. Multiple marketplaces will increase your ticket exposure, causing tickets to sell faster and for higher prices. Plus, FanList is free to use. Registration and listing tickets are free when tickets sell. FanList charges the industry standard 15% of the final sale price. It's the same rate that all those major marketplaces charge. There are no hidden costs or added fees to use FanList. It's the best way for you as a season ticket holder to sell your tickets. Go to fanlist.com/Blackhawks Crazy to receive a $20 bonus on your first sale. FANLYST.com/Blackhawks Crazy. Really appreciative once again of FanList being a presenting sponsor here of the Blackhawks Crazy podcast. So you mentioned the, I don't know if it was a degree of tension, but a degree of Jeremy Colleton after that horrid game against the Philadelphia Flyers last Thursday, more or less being matter-of-fact, stating right there and throwing on the table what he needs from some of his players, some of his players who have won Stanley Cups. And I don't think it's a shock to anybody, because when you look at the lines that have been most consistent through the first 8, 9, 10 games of the season, it were the lines that were constituted as the third or fourth lines. And the big guns that all we thought were going to be money in the bank have gotten off to slow starts. And I think it startled a whole lot of people that, you know, we weren't even thinking twice that Taves and Kane and DeBrincat and to a certain extent Strome and Gustafson would be able to at least put up numbers somewhat comparable. But they have all gotten off to slow starts, and that no doubt has been a factor of this team kind of treading water and trying to keep its head above water until those guys start clicking again.
That was a story, especially lately, heading into Sunday, was the top guys not producing. And like you alluded to, after Thursday's game, Colleton didn't come right out and say, Kane, Taves, DeBrincat, Strome, I need more.
Top guys.
He didn't come right out and say, I need more from you guys specifically. He said the third and fourth lines, the bottom six, have been producing and doing what they're supposed to do, kind of need everyone else to get on board, is what he basically said. So that was said on Thursday, and then here we are two games later on Sunday, and Brent Seabrook gets the second scratch of his career. First one came last year in January, January 2018. So to me, that's challenging those top guys, not just the top guys that produce, but your leadership core, the guys that have won three cups, and it was a bold move, and I think they got what they needed out of it Sunday. I think, look, there's a possibility that can backfire if they have another bad loss against a bad team in the Kings. Then you have the players not buying into maybe that mentality or addressing things that way, but now you get a good win, even though it's against a bad team, a lot of goals. You're scoring again. Some of your top guys are scoring, and then you're heading on the road with confidence now.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing he pointed out was, you know, playing the right way, playing a commitment to defense, puck control, puck management, and that will create the offensive opportunities. That's the one thing he was trying to instill and emphasize, that those third and fourth lines, as they were previously constituted, they were doing the job that way, and he wasn't getting enough, and one thing should lead to another if people were wondering about why these guys have been so quiet. But to their credit, after Jeremy said that, when we were at practice on Friday, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Taves, they both continued to acknowledge that they needed to be better, that they're on the same page with the message that Jeremy was presenting both to the media and presenting to them behind closed doors. And I love to hear Patrick Kane say, I want to be part of the solution to this. And then after a disappointing game on Saturday in Raleigh against the Carolina Hurricanes, in which they were shut out, who faced the music afterwards? It was Kane, Taves, and DeBrincat, all once acknowledging the frustration factor, having difficulty waiting until they finally can snap out of things. And at least DeBrincat and Strome were able to do that. And even when I talked to him on Sunday morning at the optional morning skate, Dylan Strome, I could tell he wasn't crazy about talking to me because I had put in a request. But he said, I had an opportunity in Saturday's game when it was a 1-0 game in the second period. I had a breakaway, and I shot wide. And I have to be better than that. So all these guys, no matter what Jeremy's saying publicly, at least publicly back to us, are acknowledging that they have to be better. So that's what Strome told me before the game. And then it just so turns out that as we're sitting here on Sunday night, he has a 3-point night after having 4 in the first 9 games. Alex DeBrincat, reunited on the same line with Strome, has a 3-point night with a goal and 2 assists after having 4 points in the first 9 games. And Ryan Carpenter did a real nice job centering. We should, you know, mention also that Strome has been moved over to wing, whether he's playing with Kirby Dach or whether he was playing as Ryan Carpenter in this case. So that's an adjustment factor, but if he was playing good enough at center, there's no doubt he would have been staying there. So Jeremy felt the need to move him around, look at some different combinations and potential solutions. And at least for Strom and DeBrincat, it was a solution on Sunday night. And let's hear from Dylan Strom again after his two-goal effort along with an assist, a great assist to set up Alex DeBrincat's goal, in a little bit better mood after the 5-1 victory.
Getting back with Brinksy must be nice too, huh? Kind of old feels again.
Yeah, I think we kind of find each other pretty easily. Thought we were excited before the game to get back together, and he's obviously a great player. So tonight he found me a few times, and I paid him back for one there in the slot. So it's nice to be back on his line, and a little different with Carpi at center, but he's very easy to play with. So it's fun to play with him.
He's been great on the draws this year, huh?
Yeah, he has. He's he does all the little things well. It kind of gives us a little bit of freedom to play a little offense, and he's so good defensively. So made a nice play on the Brinksy's goal. So he's a really good player.
You feeling better on the wing after a few tries?
Yeah, I think finding ways to get the puck, I think that's the biggest thing. Obviously, as a center, you have the puck, probably the most of any guy on the ice. And when you're a wing, you don't get it as much, so you got to create ways to get the puck. So I feel like I've, trying to do that a little bit better. Once you just get a little bit familiar with it, you can do it. I've really never played a wing before. I think maybe a few times last year and a few times in Arizona, but probably 5 games under combined in my life. So I'm trying to get used to it, and felt pretty good tonight.
How big a win hitting in a road trip like this?
Yeah. I think anytime you can get a win before, even if it's just a 1-game road trip, I think the fans are loud tonight. So, it's obviously not the easiest road trip with a few good teams that are playing well. So San Jose's been playing pretty good of recent, and Anaheim's doing great, and Nashville's Nashville. So obviously those teams are good teams, and we got to go into tough buildings. So nice to get one on the road first, and hopefully we can get 3 or 4, hopefully 4 or 4 on the road.
To go early, play with the lead the whole game. Been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, I feel like we just kind of continued to step on it. I think we got that first goal pretty early, and then I still think we had a really good first period, and then midway through the second ish I think a little before midway, Canfie gets that goal, and finally that line got rewarded. They been playing great, and the coach is loving the way they're playing, and Canfie does a lot of good things, so nice to see him get rewarded. And then a couple quick ones after that, so play with the lead, it's definitely nice instead of chasing the game. So play with the lead, but I think this time was the biggest thing. We didn't sit back, maybe a little bit in the third, but still found a way to keep a 3-goal lead and get a late one there.
With you and DeBrincat,
just playing together for a long time. I think we're great friends off the ice, so it just helps on the ice. I mean, obviously love playing with the guy. He's really skilled. We find each other, and Carpi was looking for us all night. So I think when you get that combo, I think we held on to pucks and made some plays, and got rewarded with a little bit more ice time. So definitely felt good.
I think of those 4 guys we've been discussing so much here at the start of the season, perhaps it may have been weighing most heavily on Dylan Strome because his body of work isn't as great as a Taves or a Kane, and to a lesser extent a DeBrincat. His flash came after being acquired by the Hawks in November, playing as good as he has at this level. So if there was a guy wondering, am I going back to my Arizona days, or am I going back? How can I get back to the Blackhawk ways? I think maybe it may have been weighing a bit more on him than perhaps some of the other guys. But make no mistake, it does bother 19 and 88 and number 12 before Sunday night. So, and you had something else you wanted to add before we hear from DeBrincat too, after he snapped out of things on Sunday.
Yeah, just talk about all these top guys that can have an elite scoring prowess. I wanted to kind of clarify that Kane, people hear us lumping Kane in with them that pay attention might say, well, he's got some goals and some assists. Yeah, he's got 3 goals, 6 assists, 9 points in 10 games. But I think it's fair to ask for more from him because he's a guy you expect to get 100 or more points a season. He has that. He's that elite. He's one of the top players in the league. So, and even he, like you said, has been asking for more from himself.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing you notice, too, though, is that even if he hasn't scored in the past, the chances seem regularly there. And I think over the course of, maybe game 3 up until game 7, 8, 9, you didn't see those dangerous chances either from Kane or Taves, whether they were together or separated.
Kane's game has been a little quiet. Yeah. That's, you don't see those dynamic spinoramas or just that vision going to work and creating space. Yeah, he's been a little unnoticeable for him, still with almost a point a game.
And we trust that it's eventually going to come, but this is just taking longer than usual. You would think that after the seasons that they had last year, the Kane and Taves numbers will eventually evolve and we'll start seeing them as we know them a little bit more. But we heard from Strome, and let's hear from Alex DeBrincat, who seemed to sound a little bit more relieved and had a little bit more of a smile on his face after Sunday's 5-1 victory.
Got bounces today, so if we keep doing that, I think we're going to keep scoring goals and keep winning games.
Do you have Dylan a hard time for listening to the table?
It wasn't the greatest pass. I think hard back pressure is kind of a tough play, so maybe I'll make a better pass next time.
Would you have shot if you didn't have two goals?
No, I don't think so. I think anytime it's a 2-on-0, you're thinking pass right away. So, just kind of the way it worked out. It was sticking a little bit and couldn't make it in this wheelhouse.
Sorry if this was asked already, but what allowed this team to keep the foot on the pedal today? Because you guys have gotten off to good starts, but the consistency was there today.
Yeah, I think, I think we've played good first and second periods, like you said, good starts. And, pucks were bouncing our way today, I think. A lot of these past few games, it's been tough to score, and getting that one early really helped our confidence, and I think we just need to keep going with them.
How important was it to win one going in our road trip? It should be pretty tough.
Yeah, it's really important, I think. Get the confidence up. Know we can win before we're on the road, and if we play full 60 minutes, we're going to have a good chance to win every night. So if we can keep doing that, we're in pretty good shape.
Brinksy, the hockey gods have a way of smiling sometimes, and I think they did tonight. I thought it was coming for a while. I said before, positives have outweighed the negative. You guys get rewarded for that tonight. You use that as a little bit of momentum, maybe?
Yeah, for sure. We haven't really gotten the bounces the past few games, and today they were coming our way. So if we can keep rolling with that, we're going to score a lot of goals and, like I said, hopefully get a lot of wins and go on a streak here.
Scott, let's circle back to the topic we alluded to a little bit earlier on, because the other eyebrow raiser on Sunday was the fact that that Brent Seabrook was, in fact, a healthy scratch. And we kind of wondered about that when we saw him among those, you know, longtime veteran players who decided to partake in the morning skate. It kind of thought you made you think, is Brent going to be a scratch tonight? And in fact, he was. So I'm sure it had to be a tough decision for Jeremy to do that. He gives Dennis Gilbert another opportunity, but we all saw how strong Gilbert's camp was. And with the exception of, the pizza pie that he served up in the first period in Prague that led to the first goal of the season against the Blackhawks, pretty solid. It goes back to Rockford and does his thing, and he shows up, gets the opportunity, and in a pairing that he had with, Gilbert was with Gustafson on Sunday night. So Gilbert ends up playing a shade under 17 minutes and collects a team-high 8 hits. And physicality helped lead to the Blackhawks really taking control of this game, because you could see what an asset that it was. Blackhawks have struggled second period all season long, but they had, 19 hits, I believe, in the second period of this game against the Kings, who did seem to control the first few minutes of that second period, and then the tide changed as the Blackhawks got more physical, and then they were able to add, bang, bang, those two goals in the final 4 minutes or so of the second period. And Gilbert looked very much at home, and another guy who impressed with the opportunity, picking up 2 assists. He was a +4. I joked on the postgame show, watch out, John Carlson. Slater Cuckoo with 2 assists and was a +4 on the night. All these guys hungry for opportunities. And I'm not saying Brent isn't hungry anymore or anything like that, but you have some guys pushing for playing time, and Jeremy is still in the process of finding out what's going to be best for this team, especially in the 8-ball that they have put themselves behind. And, you know, it's going to be a situation that he's going to have to manage. It's going to be interesting here moving forward.
Yeah, and when Jeremy was asked about it following Sunday's game, you know, is Seabrook coming back in, he said, we haven't talked about it yet. Don't need a decision until Tuesday. So it's not wham-bam, he's right back in. Like you said, these guys are pushing for playing time, and they're impressing. Gilbert, aside from the physicality, I think he plays a real dependable game when he's not serving pizza pies in Prague. Yeah. And, just talking to him after the morning skate on Sunday, he is kind of maybe a little more even inspired by the way the Blues played their blue line and to win the cup, you know, physical and strong on pucks, but still responsible. And I think that's how his game looks, and he can be. He's shown on Sunday a little bit in Prague, aside from, you know, just one big mistake, but definitely in training camp, that he could be a good, dependable defenseman for the Hawks.
And he bounced back from that mistake in that game in Prague, and then Connor Murphy came back, and Connor Murphy played really well when he was paired with Duncan Keith. Now he's on the long-term injured list for at least 10 games, so I that has to be a concern with as solid as Connor Murphy had been really through the course of last season after he got healthy from his missing the first month or month and a half or so of the season and how he had been playing since returning from that first groin injury here. Dennis Gilbert was also super complimentary of Kirby Dach because Gilbert was back in Rockford when Dach was serving his conditioning stint, and I played a bite on the pregame show about how impressed he is with this kid at the age of 18, how he's handled to turn around play, turn around momentum during his shifts. And Gilbert is already 5 years older than Kirby Dach. So it's almost like an elder statesman talking about Dach. But Kirby, another solid game for the most part on Sunday against the LA Kings. He's at the five-game mark. You know, no one's willing to answer whether it's only going to be 9 in a decision or whether a decision has already been made that he may be here long term. They do have 4 games to decide. But you will hear Jeremy Colleton here in the post game talk about the Seabrook decision, talk a little bit more about Dach and his assessment on how he's playing 5 games in. And he first here talks about his initial reaction opening the press conference to getting back in the win column after that 0-3-1 stretch. Immediately after you hear from Jeremy, we will go to your hashtag slapshot questions that you fired our way here on Sunday. But first, here's Blackhawks head coach Jeremy Colleton Sunday night.
Okay. Obviously, pleased for the guys to get rewarded for think a pretty good effort. Wasn't perfect, of course. It rarely is, but you know, it wasn't so different than probably, you know, the Washington game, the Vegas game, parts of Carolina, but the puck went in the net for us, which was a big boost. Probably lifted a little bit of a load off some of those guys' shoulders, and now we got a little bit of positive reinforcement for some of the good things they've been doing, and we got to build on it, though. And we talked about consistency. I think part of the thing we want to do is when you play well and you don't get rewarded right away, to stick with it. And I think if we continue to do that after getting a win, then maybe we can string a streak together. So a lot of positives, a lot of good performances, and now we've got to build on it.
You not only scored, but you scored early and played with a nice lead for most of the game. How much of an impact did that have, and not having had that, has that impacted the team?
Yeah, it's a jolt of confidence to see the puck go in the net. And to our credit, I thought we were pretty good defensively throughout. You know, they got a few chances in the third. I thought we weren't quite as good in the third as we were in the first two periods. But we got a goal and we built on it and we kept playing. And I think, like, you know, we had multiple lines that were giving us positive shifts. I thought habits were quite good playing in the offensive zone. So that's what we need.
What went behind the decision to pair up to break in Strome again on the fourth line?
Well, they've obviously played well together in the past, and we thought, you know, putting Carpenter there would give them a bit of protection defensively. Carpenter's a guy who he does a lot of things right away from the puck. He rarely takes a wrong decision in the defensive zone. He can win faceoffs, and Stromer can help him. I mean, he's comfortable playing low, and he can take faceoffs, but I think it frees those other two up to push the pace and make some more plays and have the puck more. I think it seems like whatever line Carpenter's been on this year, they have the puck a lot. And so work tonight. We'll see.
Do you see Strome as a winger in the long term, or is this a temporary solution?
We'll see. I think we have a bunch of guys who can play center, and obviously Kirby, we're breaking him in, and we probably see him as a center down the road. So it would be good if we had guys who were comfortable doing, you know, either way. And then you kind of let the lineup dictate who's going to play where.
What do you think of the
Hewlett
parents?
The D?
Yeah.
I thought we were good. Pretty simple. Made enough plays, but I thought our gap was pretty good. We we were able to get stops in D zone. We didn't have to spend that much time in there, and I think that helped our forwards. So good performance.
The difference between going on this trip with a loss as opposed to a win must be pretty huge.
No question. You know, we kind of laid it out for these guys before the game. We lost four in a row, but over that whole stretch, we've had enough good play that we should have been rewarded with more. You hate going back to that well too often. Wears thin. So, again, it just helps the mood, helps the energy. Guys can be happy on the plane tomorrow, and then we get ready for a really big test in Nashville.
Typically wouldn't change the lineup much after a win, but what do you do with Brent Seabrook in that situation?
Yeah, we haven't talked about it. We got till Tuesday.
Nylander had pretty good offensive play. His back checking seemed like it was working. What have you seen from him?
Yeah, he's been really good, very consistently. I don't know how many games it's been, but I feel quite comfortable with him on the ice. I thought he was excellent. Carolina also, you know, could have easily had a couple points, created a bunch of chances basically by himself with his work ethic. And when a guy as talented as he is wants to work, he's going to be a pretty good player. I think that's the case right now.
How do you assess that?
I think he's been good. He's it's not all going to be perfect. It's hard, you know, especially playing center. It's difficult league. There's big boys, and it's, you know, hard in defensive zone and hard to win 50-50s, but he protects the puck extremely well. When he does get possession, he often makes a play. He doesn't just throw it away. He advances it cleanly, puts his line mates in good situations. So we're going to continue to talk about, you know, his play away from the puck, putting pressure on the puck, getting to full speed without the puck, because when he does that, he creates turnovers, then he doesn't have to be in D zone. So, so far, so good, though.
Would you ever declare him going here that he's going to play here the rest of the season before the ninth game, or are you guys going to wait?
I wouldn't do that without Stan and I having a conversation, no question about that.
Is he faster than maybe, you know, the reports on him?
I think so. I mean, I don't know what the reports are, but I never heard that he is a great skater, and I think he is. I think he is a great skater. He, especially in open ice, once he gets wound up, he can catch guys, he can pass guys, he can close on guys. That's why I think he can be a great forechecker. He's got to get to full speed. When he does, it's pretty tough to handle for a defender.
Slapshot questions. Tweet your questions to the guys at Boated Tweets and at Scott King Media for your questions to be read on the podcast.
It's always great to hear the baritone of one Ernie Skatton introducing our questions, our hashtag Slapshot segment.
A fan stopped me at the United Center today to say how much they like our new intro. Tim, I know the guy. I've met him a few times. Real nice guy. Big Hawks fan. Tim Delavitt, I believe is how you say his last name. Really liked the new intro.
Yep.
Thank you, Ernie.
Well, yeah. That's how Ernie raises our game here, just to be a part of the show. So we always appreciate that. You hear Ernie all the time on WGN on various spots and promotions and stuff like that. So we're glad he's a part of our team. So let's get to your hashtag Slapshots questions. Scott and I will just kind of alternate, unless we want to jump in and object and throw a punch in each other's faces when we think the other guy's saying the wrong thing. But we have at Kiki's Keys. Do you feel that Doc is fitting in well with the team, Scott?
I think he has. Just the fact that he's played in five straight games. And look, outside of his staying here and his ice time in every game dictating that he's been a good fit, you just watch him play. Not only is he highly skilled and involved in every play, Carlton says he's got to work on his back check a little bit, but I watched a play, you might have seen it tonight, where he gets clobbered into the glass. And then maybe 30 seconds later, maybe not even, he's crashed in the net with the puck. So yeah. You see an 18-year-old kid do that. That's very promising.
Well, right when he got smacked in the face by the glass, he had a follow-up puck back down in the corner. He kind of regained his senses and went back behind the net and went for a puck battle. So it's those kind of things, as an 18-year-old, I think, that impresses a lot of people. He's provided value so far, at least through the first five games. And, you know, I think in Carolina he was probably one of the Blackhawks' better players. So from that standpoint, I don't think anybody has a problem with him. He's fitting in well with the team as long as he continues producing this well. And you just don't know what you're going to get from an 18-year-old, but he's been steady, level, and consistent so far. Paul Berry on Facebook, I'll take this one. Has Colleton lost the team? Where are Taves and the other senior leaders on this team as far as motivating the rest? We touched on this a little bit earlier, Paul, but I don't think there's any fracture in here. I think what Jeremy's stating is matter of fact, at least publicly to us, as I said before. These guys are acknowledging that what Jeremy is putting out there in public is the same thing he's sharing in the room. And I don't think there's a way, based on the production of those guys so far, that they can, you know, really have that much of a rebuttal. You know, it's one thing if the team is winning without that production, but they've been scuffling along. They've been fairly low scoring. And let's also keep in mind, they enjoyed their greatest success and their greatest offensive output, perhaps of their careers from an individual standpoint, after Jeremy took over last year. So if you're going to look at things one way, you also have to look at them the other way. I don't think there's any great divide here. I think those two guys are mature enough to know, and they're frustrated enough to know that they have a lot more in them, and they just have to find a way to do that. I don't think it's any buttons that Jeremy is necessarily pushing. All right, you get the next tough one from your Facebook top fan, Marcin?
See. Oh, you know what? Yeah, I would say Marcin. Okay. I'm not sure. I think there should be some kind of horn or drum roll. I think it's a new top fan. I think they stole it from Katrina.
Uh-oh. Look out. And if we're getting that wrong, please send us a note with a pronunciation guide to it, because we want to get it right. All right, Scott, what do you do with Seabrook? 4 more years on the contract.
Oh, yeah, this is not an easy question to answer. 4 years, what, 400 games, I think, technically. Look, you know, he only scratched for the second time here on Sunday in his career, but you have to imagine there's going to be more of that, just because any player, especially defenseman in today's game, when you get up there in age, you're just going to play less. And then, like everyone else, you know, you're not going to be in the game anyway. The time passes everyone by, right? So there's not a whole lot of options. I don't think he's going to be regularly scratched. I think here and there, maybe for a rest, when they want to give a better opportunity or look to some guys like a Dennis Gilbert. But, I mean, in terms of few years from now, or is he going to finish out his contract? I think it's obvious he's not going to finish out his contract. But then, what happens? Do you get someone to take his contract and throw in a prospect as a sweetener in some kind of trade? Maybe. Do you buy him out whenever? Maybe. So it's hard to tell. But I think, you know, you can expect at least a few more scratches this year, if not just to give some other younger guys more opportunity.
It's a sensitive topic because he has provided so much through all those cup runs. He's been a factor, one of the, you know, greatest Blackhawks of all time. I don't know, you know, when they raised, you know, jerseys to the rafters, maybe just like they did with Magnuson and Palat, there'll be a Seabrook / Chelios one up there. And is he the player he was 5 years ago? No, I think that's fairly obvious to say. Is he going to be a regular scratch? I doubt that either, because let's face it, there are other concerns here on the blue line, at least for this season, until the Ian Mitchells are ready next year, until the Adam Boqvists are ready. You know, there are going to have to be other guys who regularly grab hold of some of these roles and positions. And, you know, we see an Erik Gustafsson struggling a little bit this season. He's not the same player. He's been fighting the puck a little bit. So I think there are going to be openings as well where, you know, he's going to slot in for a while. Perhaps he's not going to be able to continue playing at the same regularity, but I think there are going to be some points where you won't see him in the lineup, then others he's going to be rotated back in. All right, final question. I'll take this one. Rich Marino on Facebook. Will Taves get demoted from the top lines on the PP and PK, which are both poorly rated? I don't think you can lay this all at Jonathan Taves' line again. I think people are too quick to pull the trigger on some of these guys who just last year had career years and had the best careers of their lives, and just because the first 3 weeks have not gone the way they would have liked. I think eventually we're going to see Jonathan Toews get back in a groove and become closer to the player that we all know that he can be. And you're going to have to – you can't just have knee-jerk reactions and start yanking some of, you know, the best players on your roster, even if they may not be performing that way, all of a sudden pull the trigger and pull them off of top power player or penalty kill units. They're still among the best assets that you have. Are they performing the way they want? And in Jonathan's case, he'll tell you straight to your face, no, that he hasn't been so far. But who are you going to put on there to replace, you know, on the penalty kill for all those responsibilities, on the face-off dot for important face-offs? And I don't think David Kampf, Ryan Carpenter, Drake Caggiula, Alex Nylander yet are ready to come over and bump him off top power play units or top line. So that's personal opinion there. Let's give this time, and I know people are anxious. They want this season to turn around, and even though it's sputtering at the start, let's not get too carried away. So thank you for all your questions. Sunday just wasn't the Blackhawks and Kings. It was also the Blackhawks Hockey Fights Cancer Night. They're doing it a little bit ahead of Hockey Fights Cancer Month, which is usually November. But Eddie Olczyk is going to be the league's ambassador for Hockey Fights Cancer Month. And with the Hawks' usual night, what they've been doing the last couple of years is having a purple carpet event for those fans who are currently in a battle with cancer, are in remission, or are involved with a friend or a loved one who has either gone through the battle successfully or unsuccessfully or is in one right now, honoring all those people in the atrium prior to the game. And Eddie Olczyk hosted that event. He also helped sign some of his new memoir as well. And we had a chance, Scott and I did last week, actually I think it was prior to the Philadelphia game, to catch up with Eddie to talk a little bit about his book and the honor of being the league's ambassador for Hockey Fights Cancer in lieu of what he went through a couple of years ago, making it through stage 3 colon cancer. We're chopping this up into two parts. We'll get about 10 minutes here on this podcast, and on our next one, which comes your way next Monday, we'll play the second half of this interview and share that with you at this time. So here's Eddie talking about some of the stories and how he went about writing his book, but also talking about the impact of him having such a high honor and being the league's ambassador for Hockey Fights Cancer Month.
Yeah, to be the ambassador for Hockey Fights Cancer is very honoring, very humbling, and when the league called in the summertime and asked me if I would, you know, take on that role, it was emotional just for the fact of everything that's gone on here in the last couple of years for me. But to hopefully bring hope to somebody out there that knows my story, and you know, I think the league has done an amazing job of this initiative with Hockey Fights Cancer since 1998, and all the money, but even more so the money, I think it's just the awareness and the hope that it brings. And, you know, the teams have bought in, and I know what the Hawks do. I mean, being a part of the ceremony the last couple of years has been very emotional, and it hits home. And, you know, maybe, I know someday when we rid ourselves of this disease that the league can feel very good about what they've done. I think it's the greatest initiative the league has done, so I'm very proud to be a part of it, and looking forward to the month. And you know, cancer will always be with Eddie Olczyk, and it just happens to be I get to maybe wear a little bit taller of a hat, and I got a new suit with the inside lining of it with the Hockey Fights Cancer, which was nice. So and I'll be proudly displaying that on the on Hockey Fights Cancer Sunday here at the United Center.
Was there a book in Eddie Olczyk before cancer, or is this book a byproduct?
Yeah, I think there was, but I think, and no pun intended, I think once I got sick, that was the final chapter for the decision to do the book. I mean, I've been very lucky. I've had an incredible life, both on and off the ice. Everything I have, I owe to the game of hockey. You know, I lived a dream. I grew up here. All I ever wanted to do was to be a Blackhawk, and I was able to live that. and had a lot of adversity in my life. And, you know, I thought there was a story there, but I think what brought it all together in one way or another, and I would say, look, I'm glad I'm the one that got stage 3 colon cancer, but there's a story here, and if I can help, if I can inspire one person to deal with it, stay away from it, or just get through the day, then it was well worth the 16 months of pen to paper to do it. And, you know, I think you'll laugh, I think you'll cry, and I think you'll love a little bit more if you read the book. And if one person's life can change in a positive way, then it was well worth it. So I think there was a book in the offering, but what put it over the top was me getting sick and then now being on the right side of the grass to be able to tell the story.
In your book, Beating the Odds, one of the things you talk about is the outpouring of support, obviously, from the fans when you went through what you did. As surprising and touching as that was, isn't it kind of on par, though, with the way the fans always received you in your playing career and also in your broadcasting career?
Well, I mean, I think that when you are so, you know, in the so-called public eye and, you know, people, you know, they feel for you, they worry for you, they're living this with you. In the world we live in now, I mean, there seems to be even more of a connection with, you know, people that are in the public eye. And look, and having been being a Chicago guy and having played here and now broadcast the games here for the last, you know, 14 years, which is really hard to believe. You know, it made me and my family just so appreciative for the people that I didn't know reach out and know that, you know, there are people out there pulling for me and praying for me and, you know, mass cards and notes and cards and emails and phone calls and messages and just people I come across. Because, look, cancer does not discriminate. It sadly touches us all. So, I mean, for me, the support, I couldn't have done it by myself. And when I got on TV with Pat and talked about the sickness and the disease, and then when I came back and told everybody I was cancer-free, I think the exact words I used is that we did this. Like, we beat it. And I couldn't have done it by myself, there's no doubt. But, you know, first and foremost, my wife, Diana, was the rock, and she was the one that kept me up when I was ready to break. And the caretakers and caregivers are so important in this battle, and that's something I talk about in the book. But also my wife and I are really trying to make more people aware that the caretakers and caregivers are going through a lot too, and we got to make sure we're looking after them, whether it's a text or an email or a call and saying, hey, how you doing, you know, like, I'm with you. And because I never saw my wife weak around me, and never saw her down, and never saw her worried, but I know that when she wasn't around me, she was worried and like, what's going to happen to him? So that's when she let her guard down. So we got to make sure not only taking care of the person that are sick or in the battle, but also the caretakers and caregivers.
You mentioned Pat. It was important for him when you're going through this to call you every day. That's how he wanted to deal with it. And he said that he'd tell you jokes and try to get you laughing. Yeah. Under the circumstances, were you getting Foley's A material?
You know what? I got his A++ material. And he always made me smile, and sometimes he made me cry just because he was checking in on me. And he knew when I was having good days and bad days. You know, I've known Pat for a long time. I mean, I knew Pat before we knew each other because, of course, I listened to him and Dale all those years doing the games. But I would never underestimate anything but the support that I had from my partner for being there every day, rain or shine, good or bad. And then, you know, when he threw out the first pitch at the Cub game there a couple of years ago when I was first diagnosed, that was really hard. Like, that was one of the hardest things I went through, was seeing that, because I'm thinking, like, well, geez, is this how it's going to end? You know, like, there he is holding up a Cubs jersey with Olczyk 16 on the back, and the crowd is going crazy, and he's honoring me in that way. And I just, like, my wife and I were watching it, and I didn't know, I knew he was going to be there, but I didn't know he was going to do that. And I felt like I cried for such a long time, but his friendship never wavered. He was always positive. We talked a lot about just whatever was on the docket, and like I said, there wasn't a day go by that he did not reach out. And I'm forever grateful for my partner, the great Pat Foley, for looking after me at my weakest time.
How much new material is in here that you've never shared publicly? I mean, is there a lot of nuggets that that fans may not be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I really believe that you know, I left it out there. There's nothing, especially with the cancer battle. I mean, I talk about my side effects and what it did to me and where I was in my life. And look, I'm still scared. I'm still scared of what has happened to me. And, you know, anytime I go back for a doctor, I'm always just there. You know, there's hesitation. But, you know, there's a lot about me as a kid and my family and going through hockey and hockey stories. And, of course, horse racing is a big part of my life. So, you know, I mean, I'd like to think that people that maybe don't know me as well, maybe know me a little bit better when they get through this book. But, I mean, I believe is that you will love, I think you'll love a little bit more. And I think that's probably the one thing in the book I'm hoping to get accomplished is that when I was going through my illness, I was very much at peace. I didn't know what was going to happen at the end of the 6 months. And I think why I was at peace was because the most important people in my life always knew how I felt about them. And I've always had, my wife would always tell me, oh, nothing's going to happen. I said, look, I've always want you to know is that, look, if something would happen to me, you tell me you know how much you mean to me and you're the best thing that's happened to me and I love you and our kids more than anything. And it's the same reaction of most people, nothing's going to happen. But I was at peace because I didn't know what was going to happen 6 months after. And I was at ease when I was going through that battle, believe it or not, even though it broke me down and it brought me to my knees and I was ready to quit because of the side effects. I reflected, had enough quiet time to last me a lifetime, and I was able to look back and go, you know what? Look, if my time is up, my family knows how I feel about them and the people in my circle. And I always say to my wife and to my kids, it's like, you know, it would kill me if I wasn't here that you didn't know what you've meant to me in my life. And that's what I talk about, maybe loving a little bit more, because, you know, in the big picture, like when Coach Colleton or Coach Nagy or Manager Ross says, you know, this guy's banged up a little bit, you know, he's day to day. Well, I mean, aren't we all really in the big picture day to day? So that's kind of where I go. But, you know, I think you will laugh a little bit. I think you'll cry. And like I said, I think you'll love a little bit more. And, I think if people think they know who Eddie Olczyk is, I think after reading the book, I think they'll get even a better picture, and hopefully they enjoy it. And yes, I know there are no crayons with this book, okay?
There's a lot of serve ice cream?
Well, no, yeah, maybe a little scratch and sniff in this book, but a lot of my former friends, I say, they asked if there were crayons with this book, and I'm like, okay, real funny, guys. So I'm proud of it, and probably be the only one I do. It's something that, you know, I just kind of put my heart and soul into, and I actually did the exercise of pen to paper, because anybody that knows me, I'm not very good on that thing called a computer, or that worldwide web thing.
Thanks to Eddie O, as always a great storyteller, and there are more stories to come in the second half. He relates one of the stories in the book that is particularly worth a chuckle. And how he was kind of put through the ringer as a rookie playing one of his first games at the old Chicago Stadium. Before we sign off, boy, you were all over the place on Sunday. You were Mr. Popularity, signing autographs. You also had a wide-ranging menu that you put yourself through, sampling some of the new fare here at the United Center. So fill us in on your little celebrity spin here on Sunday.
Well, we always tell you how they take care of us with food here, the media at the United Center, and it's a few bucks for the pregame meal if you want to do it. A lot of people are able to have some discipline, unlike myself, and wait till the free meal during second intermission. But I was hungry today. I went to the zoo in between morning skate and the game with my family. Didn't really eat much, so I was going to have the pregame meal. Well, I didn't have enough cash, so I thought I'd use my old credit card at the new Little Goat restaurant, United Center, which you got to sample for free. I'm very jealous. But it was delicious. I had the short rib tacos. It's maybe the best food I've had at the United Center ever. It's so good.
And then
you asked about the autograph, and then after that, I saw a fan, Tessa Martin, who's been a great Blackhawks Crazy fan. I think she's talking about interviewing me for a story. She's in school for her school paper, I believe. So she sent me a message, and she said, I'm in the 300 level. She wants to say hi. I said, of course, I'll oblige a nice fan. So I went, and walking over to say hi to her and her family, and I see the NBC Sports Chicago insider, Charlie Romoliotis, walking over too, and I realized she arranged a double meet and greet. She's trying to meet both of her two of her favorite Blackhawks media members. So.
Are you okay with that? Did you want exclusivity?
I'm okay. You know, it's okay. I was a little surprised. I liked Charlie. We get along, so it was nice. And
at least you did.
We did until I realized he's trying to two-time me with fans. No, it was great meeting her and her family. Tess was very nice, and she has these Blackhawks shoes that she had a lot of player signatures on. And she asked Charlie to sign her shoe. I think that she goes to Elmhurst College, and I think Charlie went there. So they're kind of bonding over that. Yeah. And I'm standing there. I'm like, I'd like to sign a shoe, too. You know, I'm here. And she was kind enough to ask me, and I signed. My space was right next to Patrick Sharp, so I apologize to Patrick Sharp for saying.
I'm worried about the value of those shoes now after having Blackhawk sign them.
Well, there a lot of? It's not like it was a player's skate. It's her foot stuff on the shoe, not Patrick Sharp's. You know, it's not like if I wore a hockey glove and auction it off, it's not the same as if Jonathan Toews did.
Okay. And in conclusion here, I'm sitting there at a free moment or a timeout or something, scrolling through my tweet deck, and I see you post a picture of a half-eaten bag of pumpkin seeds, too. And what's up with that?
I baked them last night after we carved pumpkins, my wife and I with our kids. I like to bake pumpkin seeds, but my daughter never had them before. She's four now, so she had them this morning. And she really enjoyed them. And I go, oh, great. And I was just talking to my wife. We go, I put too much olive oil. I think they're having trouble cooking. I think they're a little undercooked. And I guess when I left for the morning skate, my daughter said to my mom, they're a little undercooked. 4 years old.
Okay. She knows.
But I ate them all during the second period.
Pumpkin seeds are so great. If you give them the right crispiness, I like them particularly salty. And then you can experiment with some other flavors and things like that.
Next year, you got some coming your way. I'll do them right.
Well, thank you. Good, because my daughter carved a couple of pumpkins, had the seeds, and I helped myself to a little bit, but they weren't offered. So I'm feeling kind of left out there. Before we wrap up here, are the kids' costumes, have they been determined yet for Halloween?
They're pretty good. Everyone's pretty satisfied. Did both the zoo at Brookfield Zoo today. They're both in costume. My son, almost two, is started his dinosaur phase. He was an orange T-Rex, and the mouth of the dinosaur costume kept getting in his line of sight, so he had to keep propping it up with his hands. And I finally just took it off, and my daughter, who actually has long blonde hair, was Rapunzel, and she got kind of a braided little wig to go with it. So they had a lot of fun.
Very nice. So with Halloween coming up this week, I don't know what the weather's supposed to be like, but please don't raid the kids' bags too much. Allow them to have that. Even though you do the whole parental thing about we're worried about the health of your teeth.
Yes.
Let them have their share, okay? Don't be.
I already got into some of the candy we're supposed to give the neighbors. It's a whole thing. I get back on the treadmill. What are you going as? What are you going to be? I know you're.
I'm not going as anything. You're a 56-year-old man. Jeez. Although I would
Chris Bowden to knock on my door. If I'm a Blackhawks fan in some kind of costume.
Those days are long gone, my friend. All right. Well, have fun Halloween. Have fun trick-or-treating. I hope all our Blackhawk Crazy podcast fans have fun trick-or-treating or partying in whatever outfit they decide to go to. And most importantly, I want to thank them as well, again, for joining us here on this edition of the Blackhawks Crazy podcast, packed with sound. Packed with sound on this particular one. So appreciate it. Appreciate Curtis Koch as well for producing and pasting all these pieces of the podcast together. And again, we encourage you to subscribe. Thanks to the golden voice of Ernie Skatton as well. We'll come again to you next week. No, there will not be a home visit from the Blackhawks. They'll still be out on the road, continuing their road trip, finishing up before it wraps up in San Jose. But we'll have, three games under our belt, so we have to react to that, and we'll play the second half of that interview with Eddie Olczyk as well. Thanks for listening, everyone. Happy Halloween. Have a great week.
How about that?
They've won it. The Hawks win the Stanley Cup.
Thanks for listening to the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast. Tell a friend, subscribe, and join the conversation. And follow the guys on Twitter, @BowdenTweets and @ScottKingMedia.
That was great.